Marta Monti manages the Solar Group Buy Programs for the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, MREA, connecting communities with resources to use their collective buying power to save on the total cost of going solar. She is an energy and sustainability professional with experience in program management, policy analysis, nonprofit administration, outreach, and communications. She has her BA in political science from St. Louis University, a master's degree from the Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota in public policy, with minors in science, technology, and environmental policy, or STEP as it's called, as well as integrative leadership. And she's happy to call Wisconsin her home. So there you go.
Thank you, Ellen. It's very nice. All sounds like a mouthful. But yeah, so my name is Marta. I work with the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, or the MREA from here on out, because it takes too long to say that. And I work on our solar managing our solar programs. But I'm here today to tell you a little bit more about the MREA, about our solar programming, and then the bulk of our conversation is really going to be about solar. And yeah, so as I said, we're going to talk about who the MREA is, Solar 101, and then kind of like what you need to know when going solar, what costs are associated with it, what incentives are there, and what financing is available. And then I'll open it up to you guys for questions. I'll be happy to answer any that come my way. So, but before we really dive into it, let's take a step back. When we're talking about solar and renewable energy, we want to ask ourselves, why are we here? What draws us in? And when we're thinking about solar and electricity in particular, we see that there are three problems with the way that we're kind of consuming and using our electricity. First, there are unpredictable rate increases. Depending on state policy, the price of electricity rises over time in ways that are difficult to manage and predict. Second, when you're paying monthly utility bills, you're essentially paying rent on your electricity, right? You're not building your own equity around it. And third is the obvious pollution factor. Fossil fuels still produce a majority of our electricity, and solar is a real critical step in changing that. So each of these problems are mitigated through solar. To begin with, you don't feel the same impact of rate increases when you have solar. You're paying for your system upfront, but you're paying for your electricity essentially for the next 20 years upfront in that way. Solar builds equity. When you own your solar system and you own the power that you're producing, you're not having to pay that back to the utility. And then finally, solar lowers pollution because you are drawing directly from the sun rather than fossil fuels. Okay, so I said I'm from the MREA, but who are we? I'd like to tell you a little bit about who we are and some of our programs. We are an education-based nonprofit based out of Custer, Wisconsin, just right outside of Stevens Point. And our mission really is to promote renewable energy, energy efficiency, and sustainable living through education and demonstration. We were founded in 1990 from a group of individuals that were inspired by an article in a magazine that was really, they took it as a call to action, and they organized our energy fair, the first energy fair back in 1990, to bring people together to talk about sustainability. The MREA kind of has taken that, and we've hosted it annually. It's kind of like, we like to describe it as NASA meets Woodstock, because there are over the course of a couple days in the last weekend in June, we've got workshops about everything from permaculture to backyard chickens to do-it-yourself solar, and then a lot of great speakers and presentations. And then at night, there's music and food and drink and merriment and lots of fun. So, you know, we postponed for the last 2 years because of the pandemic, but we are so excited to be back at it again this year. So if you're looking for a really fun time that's mostly outside, you know, go to our website, get your tickets, and I'd love to see you there. So that's, you know, that's our major fun event that we do, but we've also got a lot of other initiatives at the MRA that we're also really proud of. So I'm just going to kind of rattle through a couple of them and highlight a few of them real quick. Our Solar Core program is a workforce development program that helps connect solar professionals and get them real work experience. The solar industry and solar installation is really one of the fastest growing jobs and job areas in the U.S. And when it comes to jobs in solar, the Midwest is like one of the fastest growing regions. So we are happy to kind of be a place where people come to get trained and certified the right way. Next is our Solar on Schools program. Wisconsin Public Schools spends more than $175 million annually on energy. That is their largest expense outside of personnel. So solar can make a really big impact and dent on that annual cost. So our recognizing the benefits of solar and how much it can really help our schools, with generous support from the Couliard Solar Foundation, Solar on Schools was developed to provide a range of resources to schools to assist them and simplify the process of going solar, helping them navigate the process so that they can get the best deals possible, that they understand the financial implications and benefits. And it's been, the number escapes me now, but at least a dozen schools have gone solar through this program so far. And, our work continues on that as well. Next, I'll talk about Rise Up Midwest. So this is a multi-state coalition that works in the Midwest to advance clean energy policy action and market development. This was a product of the pandemic. When we didn't have the energy fair to plan for the past couple of years, we shifted some of our focus and we asked ourselves what we really could do to continue to make an impact. And we saw this gap and we brought everyone together from the Midwest to form this coalition. And yeah, now we work on policy issues and expanding markets, as I said, for solar. So I think it's been a really wonderful outcome of the shift for the MREA. All right, next we've got Solar Project Builder. So kind of like our assistance that we give to Solar on Schools, a lot of the confusion around solar comes around financing. So our Solar Project Builder is an online tool, financing tool, that's really great for large institutions like hospitals and universities or municipalities to simulate the long-term financial forecasting for different types of financing for their solar array. So that's been another tool that the MRA has built. And then lastly on our list here is our Grow Solar programming. MREA's philosophy, if you haven't kind of gathered yet, is that the more solar that's out there is better. And the first way to do that is through education and outreach. And we find that it's really effective when we partner it with programming and programming with actionable steps after that. So that's what our Grow Solar programs are. And that is my bread and butter at the MREA. So I'm going to brag about it and talk about what our programs are for just a moment, what the Grow Solar programs are. So our Grow Solar programs are based on a National Renewable Energy Laboratory solarized models that started in Portland in 2009. And then the MREA started in Milwaukee back in 2013. And this is a program that started kind of neighborhood by neighborhood, and now it's grown to, we host countywide programs all around the Midwest now. So what is a group buy? What is a Grow Solar program? So it's got these five key features. First, our contractor is selected through a competitive bid contract. So there's one installer that's been vetted for the program participants. It allows us to get a high quality solar installer at a competitive price. Second, we facilitate these programs, but their success is really contingent upon the communities and the community involvement where we're working. So we rely heavily on our community members to help us get out the word, and then also establishing mutually beneficial relationships and partnerships with municipalities, organizations, faith communities, and other organizations to help raise awareness locally about solar and about the program. Next, our Grow Solar programs are limited time offerings. So we find that our programs run for about 5 months. Putting a deadline on our programs helps incentivize participation. And then fourth, we have a really strong customer outreach component. So that's our kind of education bit that I mentioned before. So today I'm giving you kind of a condensed solar power hour, but we host these solar power hours with all our programs on Zoom and in person, really just to try to get the word out about solar. And really it covers everything from the basics of solar, how our program works, how the financing works. And delivering all of this information up front helps drive down the soft costs of solar for kind of everyone. For you who gets to hear the presentation, or if you come to the Solar Power Hour, all of this information would probably take a couple weeks to really gather on your own. So we find that condensing it and then being a resource for folks helps make the program successful. And then finally, the group buys are successful because we've got economies of scale. So the more people who participate, the lower the cost is for everyone. And we have benchmarks built into our programming, which are, we set them to be achievable. And they mostly are. We find them successful. So, you know, for example, once we get 7 to 10 people who sign up in a program, then the price drops down by maybe 1%. It really depends on what the installer has negotiated with our advisory committee for the program. But it ends up being a significant savings when all is said and done through the program, because no matter when a participant signs up through our program, whether you're the first or the last, you get the total rebate. So if we hit all of our benchmarks and get a 3.5% rebate, you know, everyone gets that. So everyone wins with our Grow Solar programs, because it helps homes and businesses go solar at a lower cost than you would get out on the regular market. The installer is usually local and vetted, and they get a steady flow of business. And then the community benefits because they're moving closer towards their sustainability goals. So the MREA has been doing these programs since 2013, and the picture on the slide here kind of highlights all the installations our programs have put in over the years. So we've facilitated more than 50 of these programs in 5 Midwestern states. Over 11,000 people have come to our solar power hours. Over 17 megawatts of clean, renewable solar energy has been installed, and that equates to over $50 million of investment when all is said and done. So there's been a real big impact through our programs that we're very proud of. Okay, so I'm done bragging about our programming, and I'm going to shift now, and we're going to talk about solar and get into our Solar 101. So to start things off, let's talk about terminology a little bit and learn the difference between a kilowatt and a kilowatt hour, because these are terms that we see often, but I just want to make sure that we know what they're talking about. So kilowatts measure power capacity. It's the measurement of the most energy a solar system can put out, can produce. Hard stop. So for example, a 5 kilowatt solar array means 5 kilowatts per instance. And it's a good way to describe the system range or the system size. A kilowatt hour, however, is the amount of power that is produced over time. So kilowatt hours is what shows up on your utility bill. And that's it really, but it's important that you know the difference. So one of the most frequent questions that we get is, you know, is there enough sunlight for solar to make sense? And overall, generally, yes. Yes, there is enough sunlight. So what we're looking at here is a iridescence map. So the areas in red receive the most amount of sunlight, yellow a little less, and then green, blue, purple receiving the least amount of sunlight each year. So we're comfortably in the green in Wisconsin. And you'll also notice in the right-hand side, there's an inset map of Germany, and they're mostly blue and purple. However, they lead the world in solar installations, and they have a goal to generate 50% of their energy from solar by 2030, and they are well on their way. So I like to say, if Germany can do it with our with their purples, we can do it with our greens, no problem. All right, now let's talk about basic configuration of a solar array and how it works. So we all know on a nice day like this, at least here in where we are in Sauk, a nice sunny day, the sun photons come down from the sun and hit your solar array, the collection of panels or modules, that's what we're referring to or what I'm referring to when I say array. And then they get excited and they the electrons dance around and they create DC or direct current electricity. And then it's sent to your inverter. And that inverter is super important. It's kind of like the brains of your system. It converts that DC to AC energy, alternating current, which is what your appliances use in your house. And then it goes through your meter. And basically, you know, the inverter in your meter decides how much energy you need in your home. If you're producing more than you need, then it goes to the grid, back to the grid. And then so, you know, whatever you don't use will go on down the road to your neighbor. So as you can see here, they're really not, there are no moving parts with your solar system. So that means there's very little to break. And generally your solar panels will come with about a 25-year warranty. This will vary. Panels will come with a 25-year warranty. Inverters generally come with a shorter term warranty, 10 to 15 years. And you should also get at least a 5-year workmanship warranty. So things to look out for when you are talking with your installer is making sure that they are good on their warranties. Another thing to note here about the panels is that, you know, their efficiency is going to slowly decrease over the years, but they, even over the course of, it's a small amount is what I'm saying. So over the course of their lifetime, 20, 25 years, the amount that they're going to be producing at year 25 is going to still be producing enough to, you know, power what the installer predicted they would be producing, at least that's from the data that we've been seeing so far. Okay, so I mentioned inverters before, and I want to talk about them again for just a second. They really are the brains and the heart of your solar array, because they do a lot of the work, they do a lot of the thinking. So there are a couple different types of inverters out there. The first one being a string inverter. It's the most basic, cheapest design, and it is perfect. Because it maximizes the power coming from each of the panels that it's connected to. It's perfect if there is absolutely no shading or sunlight on those panels. But however, if there's even shading on just one panel, the efficiency of all of the panels drop. So often you'll see string inverters on ground mounts because they are out in the open, away from trees, poles, things like that. So there's a solution to that problem, problem issue that makes, you know, solar make a lot more sense on rooftops. And those are microinverters and power optimizers. They really help maximize the output on your array when there is shade. So microinverters have an inverter on each individual panel. And power optimizers have optimizers on each panel, and they're connected to a like main central inverter. The power optimizers are an effective option because they're highly efficient. They tend to cost less than microinverters, and they have fewer instances of failure. But really, this is something that your installer, when they're designing your system, will take into account, and they will be suggesting which which inverter type makes the most sense for your property. All right, so next I want to talk about the concept of grid tied versus off-grid. So sometimes a lot of people connect the concept of solar to being off-grid entirely and using battery backups when the sun's not shining. And that's not really the case in how it works. You know, if that is what you want, you can work with your installer to make that happen. But it's really not the most cost-effective or efficient way to utilize solar energy at the moment. And there really are a couple reasons for this as well. So first, in a grid-tied design, your system provides the power to your home, and then any excess energy that you've generated goes to the grid. And then conversely, when your system isn't generating enough energy for your needs, it pulls back from the grid. So there's a give and take there. It's at least grid-tied is less expensive than being off-grid because it allows for something called net metering, which is that give and take, which I just mentioned. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. And then finally, grid-tied is, their systems are tied to the grid for safety reasons. You know, if the utility grid goes down during a storm or for maintenance or anything like that, your PV system also shuts down because if you think about it, if your system is still on and the grid is off and there are workers out there working on the line to repair it, and your system is sending energy their way, they can get zapped. So it's a safety concern. But you know, there are battery backups and generator options for those that, you know, always want to be connected. Okay, so I mentioned net metering, and really what it is that any excess electricity that's produced by your solar system is exported to the utility grid, and then it's subtracted from the amount of electricity you import from the grid, and that's how your bill is reduced overall. That's how you get the credit for your solar. And it kind of works like rollover minutes in a way. So like, you know, you've got your credits for the day. Well, actually, it's best explained by this graphic that I've got on the slide here. So this is a day in the life of a net metered grid-tied solar home. So it shows how you would use and produce energy over the course of the day. If you're producing more than you're using, then you get a credit every month with your bill. So generally, you want the total of your yellow curve when your solar array is producing energy to be equal to the area of your blue curve, which is what you're using. And you can kind of see, like, you know, how the blue curve works. It doesn't line up with when your array is producing its energy. So, you know, when you wake up in the morning and you make your coffee and you're getting ready for the day, you're using a little bit of energy, not so much during the day, unless you're working from home still, like me. But then, you know, your energy usage kicks up again at night when you're starting to cook dinner and watch your programs on the TV and stuff like that. So, you know, it's okay. The net metering makes it okay that you're not using the energy exactly when it's being produced. And even if you're not a net producer, so even if you've got more blue than yellow on your curve, you still get that credit on your bill every month because you are using some of the energy, you're using the energy that you produce. So that's a day in the life of a net metered home, and this is a year in the life of a net metered home. So this chart shows the annual energy usage or projected usage of a home with solar versus an average home. And so you can see that some months your solar array is going to generate more energy than you use, and other months you'll be using more from the grid. But you know, at the end of the day or the end of the year, you can see how net metering works because it resolves your credits and your excess production rolls over to future months. All right, so that's kind of like the basics of solar. Now we're going to get a little bit deeper and talk about what options and considerations that you should be thinking about when looking at solar on your property in particular. So location and siting is super important. For most people, Roof mounts are the ideal array amount, but that just means that where you put it is even more important. You want your roof, or you want the array to be on your roof that's as close to due south as possible, free of trees, power lines, any obstructions that are going to cause shade. East or west facing roofs also work for solar. That just means that the panels on that side of the roof are going to produce a little less energy than they would if they were facing perfectly south, and that's mitigated by adding extra panels. So if there's space, it can resolve itself that way. And then also, like, the pitch of the roof is important as well, and good sun exposure. So from about 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. is the ideal time that you want that area to be receiving a lot of sun. And, just how much sun your property gets is something that the solar installer will be doing. They've got programs that they can run and do tests to calculate exactly how much sun you're getting. But if it's hard to see in here, a little bit easier for the folks on Zoom. But on this picture, the background here is from Google Project Sunroof. So it's it's an extension of Google. You can go into this into that website, enter your address, and you can see kind of what your solar potential is on your roof. The brighter it is, the more sun you're getting. But this program is limited. It also kind of kicks out some numbers and calculations on what it might cost to put solar on your property. Use it as a range or a ballpark. It's not very accurate. It also doesn't take into account garages, barns, other things aside from your house proper. So, but it's a good starting spot. Okay, so I kind of was starting to talk about it, but roof mounts are really the most common type of arrays that you'll find on homes and businesses. So let's talk about some of the structural considerations to think about. Of course, avoid shading. That's a given kind of anywhere with solar, really. But the main thing to think about is the age of your roof. So it can really influence the viability of a roof-mounted system. So we like to say that if your roof is within 8 years of being replaced, you probably want to replace your roof before you put solar on, or do them at the same time and have the contractors talk with each other. It saves you in the long run. You don't want to put your solar array up and then have to have the installer come back to take it all down so that the roofer can replace your roof and then have the installer come back, put the array back up. It really, like paying for your solar installation 1.5 times, at least, if not more. And another way to think about it is that once your solar array is on your roof, if that's where it goes, it's kind of protecting whatever roof structure that you've got underneath it, because it's not exposed to the elements like that. And as I mentioned before, you're not limited to just putting solar on your house. You can put it on any sound structure, like your garage, a carport, a barn, a pergola. Your installer would have to inspect the structure to make sure that it can support the panels, or if there's a way to bolster the support so that they can host an array. You're not limited to just your house. And then the other most common array that you will see is a ground mount. It is an option where you've got setback requirements and space, where there are setback requirements and where space allows, or where it works out for that. So the array is anchored in concrete footings. Ground mounts are really good for larger systems, systems that are too big for your roof as well, or if your roof gets too much shade. And again, because they're fixed, they need to be positioned in the way that gets the most sunlight and away from shaded areas. So each solar array is really, it's custom. There's no cookie cutter design for it. Each array is designed for you, your property and your specific electrical usage. So, you know, two different families could be living on the same property and using their electricity differently, and then need two different, you know, would need two different size arrays for the same house. So that's what I mean when I say it's really dependent on you and your electricity usage. So when an installer performs a site assessment, they take these things that are specific to you and your property into consideration to determine the system size and the cost and design and all of that. And in the industry, these are known as adders. It doesn't mean that they're fancy extras, though. They're often necessary to get the panels on safely and properly installed on your roof. So some of the things that that fall under the category of adders are the module type, the inverter type, like I mentioned before, the slope and the height of your roof and the complexity of the installation, if they need extra safety equipment, if they have to do electrical upgrades to your panels, the roof as well, as we kind of mentioned. So kind of all these things that we had talked about before fall under these categories of adders. And we'll talk a little bit more about them in a moment, but not before we talk about energy efficiency. So like I said in that on that last slide, where you can have two families living in the same home and have different electric usage, your personal energy usage is really important to taking steps towards energy independence. So we like to say that the cheapest kilowatt hour is the one that you never use in the first place. So you know, go through your home and think about it. You know, are there places where you can make changes and upgrades? So do we have old appliances that you could upgrade to Energy Star appliances? Do your lights need to be changed to LED bulbs? Something I really like is just an easy one is, do you use power strips enough? Like, there are so many things that draw power even when you're not using them, that if you just put them on a power strip and then turn that power strip off when you're not using it, it's pennies, but it adds up, right? And then there are the big things like air sealing and installation. Making these good energy efficiency improvements up front helps reduce the cost of your array in the long term, because it can ultimately reduce the size of the array that you need. So in our power half hour, we've kind of gone through the things that we need to know to be able to ask ourselves now, is my home well suited for solar? So ask yourselves these things. Do I have a southern facing roof, or do I have space on an east or west space that can support panels? Do I have shade issues? Do I anticipate re-roofing anytime soon? Is my roof structurally sound? Is my electrical stuff upgraded, or is my panel upgraded, or can it support solar? And is my home energy efficient? And if you have questions at this point and you're still not sure, that is okay, because we haven't talked about the other big part of this, which is the cost of solar. So now let's talk a little bit about pricing, state and federal incentives, and financing options before we wrap it up. So like I said on that considerations and adders slide, every home is really different. And there are a lot of factors that'll impact the price of your array. So again, system size and design. Very small arrays are less expensive, but overall cost more per watt. So it might look more expensive on paper at first when you think about it. What type of modules are you using? Premium, if you want American made, that'll usually cost a little bit more. And as I said, things like a steep roof or electrical work will add to the cost, as well as things like, if you've got more than one array, if you put one array up on your roof and then one on your garage, that's going to increase the price as well. So there's really a spectrum of solar out there and for pricing. So it really, as I said, and I'll say it again, probably one or two more times, your system is designed to you and your energy needs. So, you know, there are, you can have a smaller array, one array on a garage. A smaller system is 4 to 5 kilowatts for about $15,000. All the way up to a large ground mount that's over 10 kilowatts for about $40,000. So, and this is just, these are not hard and fast numbers. These are just examples and illustration. I just want to make that clear. You know, there's a range in price and, but there also are incentives out there. So I want to chat about those real quick. So in Wisconsin, we are lucky enough to have, some rebates available to us from the Focus on Energy folks. It's a state level incentive in the form of a rebate. And they offer these incentives to help offset the price of solar. So for residential installations, you can receive up to $500 off. Business customers can receive up to $50,000. I've just got the range. There's quite a range in it, but for smaller businesses, for a 5 to 10 kilowatt system, you can get up to a little under $2,000. This is great. I like this one. There's a new grant for special sectors, so nonprofits and schools and government organizations can receive up to a little over $80,000 for their array. And also our agriculture producers can receive up to $60,000. And then in addition to all of this, if you are in a, there's another, they call it the rural incentive. And so if you are a resident of a rural area that is in their list of zip codes. So if your zip code falls in the list that they've got, you get another $500. So the incentives are out there. It's not an infinite amount of money. There's a pool of money for each of these different sectors. You know, it's first come, first serve. So when it's gone, it's gone. I just checked at the end of last week for the residential sector, and there's about $1 million left, and it started about $1.5 million, I think, this year. So there's still quite a bit of money left for folks to use, but they're we always see towards the end of the year, not really procrastinators, but there are these incentives to be taken advantage of. And a lot of people sign up towards the end. So, you know, with these, the sooner the better. If you're thinking about solar, to take advantage of them, that's my recommendation with that. And, to get this rebate, if you're working with a credible installer, they will help, navigate this process and apply for that rebate for you. And then there is the Federal Residential and Commercial Renewable Tax Credit, or the ITC. So this is a 26% tax credit for all qualified expenditures, which is fancy talk for labor, installation, and some of the wiring. What it doesn't include is if you need to make structural upgrades or like those electrical upgrades to your electric system to be able to support a solar system. So it's a 26%. It's at 26% now. It's kind of a thing of contention because it often drops down, and then Congress will say, let's bump it back up again. So it kind of fluctuates, but it's 26% this year. Next year, it drops down to 22% though. But however, that might change depending on the way that federal policy goes. So, but things to know about this is that if you don't, you need to have a tax appetite to be able to take advantage of the federal tax credit. But if you don't have a large enough tax appetite to receive the full 26% rebate in 1 year, like if you don't owe more than what you would be getting back from them, that rolls over to the next year, and you get that credit the next year. So you still get the full 26% from them. There's also a federal tax credit for businesses that works pretty similar to the residential tax credit, but also a little different. So these are things that you talk to your tax professional to help you navigate how to do that on your taxes, but it's out there. And then finally, I want to draw your attention to financing options. If you want to finance your solar array, you can always use your a home equity line of credit. That's a popular one that's used often. But you, there's another option. There are multiple options out there as well. We encourage you to, you know, check with your local lenders for options. But the MREA has a partnership with the Clean Energy Credit Union. It was founded in 2017 for the purposes of helping folks finance renewable energy projects, as well as electric vehicle purchases. So that's a member-based credit union, but the MREA is a member. So if you'd like to take advantage of their rates that they've got available, you just contact us and you can take advantage of their rates through us as well. So. So there are, you know, and also installers will offer financing options of their own. So really, it's a matter of shopping around and finding what is best for you. And then finally here, let's talk about home values a little bit. As residential solar installations have continued to increase, the real estate market is kind of starting to recognize the value of solar. And also some studies have started to come about as a result of this, to really see what the impacts are like. So one recent study from the National Renewable Energy Laboratories found that homes with solar sold faster and with a higher value than equivalent non-solar homes. And then another Zillow study backed that up and found that homes with solar sold for about 4% more than their non-solar counterparts. And really, in a nutshell, what these studies show you is that putting solar on your house is not going to be a detriment if you want to sell your house before the life of the array is up, and it actually might help a little bit. And lastly, I know I talked a lot about the financial implications of solar, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the environmental benefits as well. You know, there's a really big impact that even a 5 kilowatt array, which is a small, average to smaller size array, can have over the course of its 25 years. By reducing your carbon footprint, you're offsetting 163 tons of carbon dioxide, which is equivalent to things like, it's like recycling 500 tons of waste instead of sending it to a landfill, or it diverts almost 80 tons of coal from being burned. And the harmful emissions that are mitigated by one solar array, you know, is really palpable when you put it in terms like this. And then finally, I want to look at just what a typical installation timeline looks like, what you can expect once you've kind of said yes to going solar. So you've got to share your basic information with your installer, your electric usage, to get started really before they can make the design for your system. But once they do that and you sign your contract, it's really just a matter of getting on their build schedule. I'm hemming and hawing because I realized that I didn't talk about something real quick before we get too much deeper into the installation timeline. It's the contracts. I want to say a little bit about that. The contracts are big and bulky and sometimes complicated. So I urge you to just look through them. I also urge you, if you aren't able to go through a group buy program, we don't have one in Sauk County this year. We did in 2020. Get multiple quotes from multiple installers and compare them. The lowest price is not always the best way to go. So, you know, you're looking for quality, look for find an installer that you feel comfortable with and, you know, is asking the questions, the right questions from you, from what you've learned today, and giving you the right information. Your site assessment, for example, should always be free. If you've got an installer that's saying that they want you to pay to have them come out to your house and start the process, that should be a red flag. Also with the contracts, it's comment that they will, that installer will ask for somewhere between 20 and 50% of the project cost upfront. But if they're asking for 100% upfront, that's another red flag. So, okay, that's what I wanted to take a step back to say, to make sure to say. But once you sign the contract, it's about a 3-month process to getting your solar array installed, because it's getting on the build list. And that will vary from installer to installer, but it's also a matter of getting the proper permits lined up from the city, from whatever jurisdiction that you're involved in. That's another thing that your installer should be taking care of. If they're asking you to pull permits, you should tell them to do it and maybe find a different installer. But the actual installation, when all is said and done, will really take 1 to 3 days, depending if you've got a more complex install, if there needs to be digging or trenching done, like if you've got a ground mount and trenching needs to be done to connect to your meter, it might take another a day or two. And then after that, there's another process where the utility needs to come out, and possibly even a city inspector needs to come out and check your system, make sure it's working properly. And then you can have permission to turn on your system and operate it, and then you're on your way. That's a typical approximate timeline for most installs. Depending on the time of year, if the installer is a little bit busier, that it might take a little bit longer, but just things to think about with that. And then finally, just going to give one more plug for the MREA. We're a member-based nonprofit, and together with our partners around the Midwest, we work to expand renewable energy and renewable energy adoption through educational events, renewable energy training, and our innovative programming, like our Grow Solar programming or our Rise Up Midwest. But really, no matter what our program is, our mission is to promote renewable energy, energy efficiency, and sustainable living through education and demonstration. So that's all I've got for my formal bit. I'd love to hear any questions that you've got from the audience or from Zoom as well. Thank you. What you're describing are solar farms or solar gardens, essentially. They're not that they're common. You can find them all over the country. They're not that common in Wisconsin, and that's a direct result of state policy at the moment. So the utilities kind of have a hold on that at the moment. So it's harder for independent companies to come in, set up these solar farms, and basically, yes, it would be it's like a subscription service. You're paying for like a panel or a plot in that solar garden. There are a handful in Wisconsin, and but not as common as they are in other states. What I'm hearing is the question is what do utilities think about residential solar, or we call it distributed generation. So that's energy that's not that's not produced and sent to you directly from the utility. So of course they don't love it. They don't, anything that basically takes control away from them and gives the power to you, they would prefer to control it. The way that you see that most commonly is net metering and net metering policies. So if you are producing more than you're using and you're sending more energy back to the grid, the utility is not going to be paying you at the same rate that they're charging you. So they might be charging you 11 cents per kilowatt or per watt, but they'll be paying you 3 cents. So it's really not, it really doesn't make sense to like, oh, I'm going to build a big solar array on my house. Like I only need to use, I'll use what I need. And, the 20% that I don't use goes straight to the grid, and then I'll make, be a moneymaker. That's unfortunately not how it works. And that's how they're able to kind of regulate and tamp it down. And there are lots of other things that come up. They try to push things through policy in the state, through the state, or to make it more to make it difficult and basically uninviting for people to go solar. Those efforts have been thwarted in recent years. But you know, that's what they do. And it really varies utility by utility. You know, I really like working with co-ops and municipal utilities. They struggle. I mean, it's, you know, money and budget is always a difficult thing, but they often want what's best for their customers. So that's my personal. There are a couple ways in the solar industry that companies can get recognized as, you know, having these qualifications. But the biggest is NABCEP, so North American Board Certified Energy Practitioners. It's a mouthful, NABCEP. NABCEP, N-A-B-C-E-P, National, now I'm going to lose it again, National Association Board Practitioners, Certified Board Practitioners of Energy, NABCEP. I know I got it wrong. I'm joking now. But yeah, NABCEP. So if you want an installer that's NABCEP certified, so that's the gold standard in certification. So through our sort of courses and our course trainings at the MREA, they're towards getting NABCEP certification. So they're taught towards the NABCEP tests and being able to pass them. So batteries are still pretty expensive. You know, they can be about $15,000 to $20,000 per battery. And one battery is not going to be enough typically to power your entire home. So you would need 4 to 5 batteries if you are trying to power everything in your home. Now, the benefits to having battery backup or a generator backup is, you know, for when the grid goes down, if you've got, you know, critical... they handle your critical loads. So, and what I mean by critical loads are your, you know, your appliances that you want to keep running. If you've got medical devices that you need to keep running, you know, things like that. Generators and battery generators are great for that. And the technology is continuing to advance. And, you know, we are really going to see the price of batteries has been dropping, and it's going to continue to drop for the next couple of years as the technology improves and there are more manufacturers of it as well. And they're getting smarter. So they speak with the inverter, always going back to the inverter that does a lot of work. But, you know, the inverter, there are ways where it connects to your inverter. And once your inverter is shut down from the grid, it flips a switch internally, and then it goes to your battery generation. It's also useful for electric vehicle charging. So if you can charge your battery during the day and then charge your vehicle off of the battery at night, not pulling from the grid, but using that charge that you know, you built up during the day. So, you know, as the technology progresses, the cost will go down. Right now, it really is not cost efficient to get enough batteries to kind of charge your home. Tesla, you know, Tesla's all the rage. It's really hard to get Tesla products, at least anecdotally from the installers that we've worked with. But yeah, I guess I'll leave it there. That's kind of where my opinions are with that. I think you're referring to the Tesla roof panels as well. I think they're a fun idea, but think of them like shingles on your roof. Once one gets damaged, are you going to go up there and replace that one panel? You know, that one shingle. It's creative technology. I don't think that it's the most efficient way yet. And we see it. It's more present on the West Coast. I don't think it's really made its way here yet. I don't think installers have that product. But again, in my personal opinion. So, I mean, yeah, when there's snow on top of your panels, it's not going to be producing. But the good thing about the panels is that they're black and they attract heat. So, you know, when there is a big storm, the panels, even if there's just a little bit of the panel exposed to sunlight, it's going to start warming up the entire panel, and then it's going to slip down. So most people do not do maintenance with their panels. They let weather just kind of take care of it, clean off the pollen, let the snow melt when it, as it does. The more diligent panel owners will get a rubber roof rake. And if they can safely access their roof, get up there and kind of scrape it down. There are actually a couple installers that I love that like in Wisconsin that will give you a rubber roof rake with your array. It's kind of like getting a scraper for your car with your new car. You know, it's not necessary. You know, when we have those big storms, then yes, your panels are going to not produce energy for a few days. But I mean, when people think of solar, they think of summer, they think of hot and heat. But actually, panels, they are more efficient and they operate most optimally in cooler weather and cooler temperatures. So there are times when your array can really produce more energy in the winter than expected. Yeah, it is common to see solar and geothermal in the same place. So for folks, real quick, geothermal is harvesting the energy that you can really get from the ground or from water. So it's basically a system of wiring and tubes that's dug into your ground. It can either be, you know, vertical, or it can be horizontal, again, but underneath your ground, underneath the ground. If there's a water source or a pond or a lake nearby that they can also get under. I mean, it's really using the geothermal that's around to harness. When it's just something to note, it's interesting. I mean, when most people think of geothermal, you think you need to have a big amount of space, but it, you know, since it can go in vertically, it's an option. And technologies on geothermal are even expanding rapidly and really interestingly. But also air source heat pumps are another technology that you can look into if you want to pair it with solar that goes nicely if geothermal isn't a good option as well. So just putting that out there. Okay, March. The panels are very durable. They can withstand at least over 1-inch hail, over 50-mile-per-hour hail winds. I think I've got a note in here. I want to make sure. Yeah. So it's because the silicon in the panels is so fragile that the glass covering needs to be very strong. So while the panels might not be bulletproof, they more often than not can withstand, you know, they can take a beating. So for example, we had a couple programs in Iowa. And so a couple years back with the derecho that came through, some panels like came off roof and all, like the roof came off, but the panels were still attached, right? The panels are durable when they're installed properly. They're durable and they can handle quite a bit of hail. If you liked what you heard about our Grove Solar programs and you don't live in Sauk County or you know folks, which you probably do in other areas of the state, tell them about our programs and send them to our website. This year, we are going to have a program in Jefferson and Waukesha counties. We'll also have another program in central Wisconsin and then in a few other surrounding states as well. So, yeah.
Well, let's all thank Marta for a great program. We had a lot of interest.
Thank you. MREA.org.